Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. My very special guest today is Congressman Ron Paul. If you're just joining us, you can read Dr. Paul's articles each week at ronpaulinstitute.org and check out his daily program at ronpaullibertyreport.com. And Dr. Paul, when you were in Congress, you introduced a bill titled the Free Competition in Currency Act. And in the last segment, we talked a lot about the Federal Reserve and basically kind of the monopoly on currency. Explain the intent of the bill and why it's a good idea.
Well, I'm trying to introduce and legalize the notion that there should be a market in currencies as well, and that there shouldn't be a monopoly, and that you can have competing currencies. Since our government has failed us, they do have authority to deal with the currency, but they were told through the Constitution that only gold and silver could be legal tender. So they have defaulted on us, and now they commit fraud by just printing dollars willy-nilly all the time and causing these trouble. But what I want to do is legalize it so that if you want to use something else and even use what the Constitution says, that they can't rule against you. If you and I used old silver dollars and said they were dollars, of course they would come down hard on us. So I think the Bitcoin thing sort of introduced the notion that there could be competition. I was never a big champion of Bitcoin, but I argued the case that as long as there's no fraud involved, people should be able to use alternative means of exchange. But I think that competition in this day and age is probably something not too difficult in the computer age. And the only danger would be is if anybody uses fraud, but how could it be any worse than the fraud of the Federal Reserve government and our own government spending programs? But I think this means that you don't have to tomorrow close down the Fed and just say, well, the money doesn't work anymore. That would be a bigger adjustment than we need. And yet that is a threat, because if you have runaway inflation and people desert the dollar, you would have a crash like that. But I think if there were competition and people could opt out of it and compete with the government money, I think that would be a good way to do it. And you have to get rid of the legal tender laws, but you also have to get rid of taxes on money. So if we were using gold or silver, if we purchase and get a gold dollar at $1,000, and then when we spend it and it's $1,500, the government will want to tax us on the capital gains of the dollar, of the value of the gold. So you need to get rid of sales taxes and capital gains taxes, and you need to repeal or alter the legal tender laws to allow us to compete with the government.
You know, Dr. Paul, in the past, you've been an advocate of returning to the gold exchange standard. Could you explain to our listeners what the gold exchange standard is, why it might be a good idea to return to it, and then finally, is it even possible? Is that in the realm of possibility?
Well, the ultimate end of most paper currencies when they stop working is to restore confidence by metals, because, you know, it's happened many times. It happened in our revolution. It happened after Civil War period. It's happened in various countries around the world. But you have to restore confidence. It's usually with a linkage to gold and silver. The gold exchange standard is a lot better off than what we have, but I usually refer to it as a gold coin standard, because you want to be able to, if the government's involved and they're issuing gold certificates, every individual should be able to vote any minute they want. They should be able to walk into any bank and say, here's a gold certificate. I want my ounce of gold. And that's a little bit better than if it's, a bullion standard, an exchange standard, and limited. But anything that would restrain the printing presses would be beneficial. And, of course, we've gone from a pretty good gold standard one time to once, and then we got the Fed in, and it wasn't too long after that we had depression and then confiscation of gold. So we made a little progress backwards, because even though officially we can't use gold to compete, we do, in the sense that some people ultimately, for their long-term savings and their nest egg, will use gold to, put away and say that, in case of an emergency. So it is a preservation of wealth for a lot of people.
Well, Dr. Paul, you mentioned the printing press, and whenever you see easy money policies, you see not only debt levels at the federal government level increase, but also we have private sector debt levels that, when measured as a percentage of the economy, are greater than they were at the beginning of the Great Depression. So given the level of debt that exists in the private sector and on the books of the federal government, is it possible to avoid a major financial crisis, or is one imminent?
No, I don't think it's possible to avoid it. I mean, we're locked in place. All the malinvestment, all the inflation has been, we've seen that happen. So it will be resolved. It's just how it's done. And the debt is a key issue. And the debt, under these circumstances, has to be liquidated. The markets want to always correct the mistakes, whether you made bad investments because you were misled by low interest rates, or you used too much money and you got your debt over your head and you can't do it. So the market says it's out of whack, so they want to liquidate debt. And that's the part that the politicians can't accept, because it'd be pretty bad. But you take the student loan debt, $1.4 trillion, and half the people aren't even paying, and yet just yesterday they announced they were going to make it easier to get a student loan. So it's going to keep doing this until people just finally leave it. And the liquidation, if we were in charge and wanted to correct it, what we would do is just allow the bankruptcies to come. Instead of bailing out everybody by creating another bubble and printing more money, the people who were overly leveraged and they had too much debt, they would have to buckle up and the default would occur. The Keynesians understand that there has to be some liquidation of debt, but they plan to do it by just devaluing the currency. And if you have an $18 trillion national debt and you can get 50% inflation in the next couple of years, the real debt is, cut in half. It's cut down to $9 trillion. So that's always their goal, and they get very frustrated when their measurement of inflation, which is erroneous, and that is the CPI, doesn't respond. Then they say, well, we have to have 2% inflation rate. So they're accepting the principle that they have the authority and responsibility, and it would be real smart to just purposely devalue the currency and make sure that the people who are saving money and there's zero interest rates, those people who want to take care of themselves, they're the ones who are punished the most. So it's a terrible system. But no, there will have to be a liquidation if we allow it to happen. It'd be something like 1921, when there was a crash, there was a depression, it lasted a year, and people went back to work. And yet here we are, 89 years, just propping up bad investments, and we limp along. But eventually, I think there will be a major episode where the deflationists, I don't think, even though the market wants deflation, I don't think we really have gotten into that, because the money is still out there. It's just not being used the way the government wants it to be used. And I think that day will come, and then the dollars will be used, and then you will have inflation, and there will be a lot of liquidation of debt.
So, Dr. Paul, assuming that we go back to the financial crisis, if the government bailout of the banks had not occurred, would we have, in your opinion, maybe just experienced a year or two of deflation, some tough sledding, and things would be a lot better today?
Well, I think there would, but I don't think it would. I think it would be even shorter than that if it was a clean break. You just let it go. It would be over quickly. I'm convinced that if you did that, you had a sound currency and you freed up the market and got rid of the income tax and about 90% of all the regulations, I think that we'd be back on our feet rather carefully. During our presidential campaign, they kept saying, well, you have these plans, but don't the people have to sacrifice? And I said, well, if I offer you no taxes and no regulation, you get to keep what you earn, and you have a sound currency, and you have your freedom back again, why is that supposed to be a sacrifice? So, no, I think if people knew what was going on and the importance of it, people would go back to work pretty quickly. But we're not quite at that stage yet.
Dr. Paul, I believe you stated your view that the stock and bond markets are in unsustainable bubbles. Can you explain how you've come to that conclusion and what you expect for stocks and bonds in the near future?
Well, my own personal view is that they're out of whack. I wouldn't buy a government bond or any bond right now, nor stocks, unless it was related to some commodity that I trust. Well, I think it's just looking at it. Bernanke and others say, well, you don't know there's a bubble until it bursts, and I don't believe that's true. I think you can look at it. You can look at what the Fed has done. You can look at charts. I mean, I think it was pretty easy to say that the NASDAQ was in a bubble in the year 2000, which was, I think, the beginning of this unwinding, which has been very, very slow and unwinding. But I think the same charts are available, and the values get distorted, and there's a lot of shenanigans going on. But look along the bonds have been in a bull market, long, probably might be the longest in history. I mean, since the early 1980s. So that is something. I just think that from money supply and prices, that things are in a bubble. I think the stocks are doing this. It took a long time. Just think how long it was that the NASDAQ was around 5,000, in the year 2000. It's below 5,000 now, and if you paid taxes and a price for your inflation, you're way behind. And I still think it's way overpriced, but I don't think you have to assess it and say there's a bubble only after it bursts, because most of the Austrian economists who look at the money supply and this issue as I do had predicted, that it's in a bubble. It wasn't like they said nobody knew there was a bubble and there'd be, a bursting of the NASDAQ or a bursting of the housing bubble. And they don't believe us when we say there's going to be a bursting of what is remaining of the stock market and also with the bond market.
Well, we have time for one more question, Dr. Paul, and I want to shift gears a minute and talk a little politics. Well, I'm sure we know your favorite or have a pretty good idea of your favorite in the upcoming presidential election. How would you assess the campaign in these early stages?
Well, the entire campaign, what's going on, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many Republican candidates for president.
Oh, yeah.
There's been some surprises in the polls. Any thoughts on why you see non-political candidates seemingly leading the field, at least in these early stages?
Well, it is true to a degree. Of course, Trump represents that viewpoint, and Fiorina does too. But I look at only the issues and what they stand for, and there's nothing new. It's the same old stuff. And then when you look at the Democrats, I mean, the one that surprised everybody is Bernie Sanders. He's known nothing else other than politics in his lifetime, but he is seen as somebody that's a straight shooter, even though he talks a straight, straight on, I like socialism. He still, it scares me that somebody like that would get as much attention, and then, of course, it bothers me that essentially everybody, with the exception of a relative of mine, that stand for the same old stuff. Are they talking about getting rid of the Fed and having a gold standard and bringing our troops home and keeping the government out of our bedrooms and getting rid of NSA and all these other things? No, they're not talking about it. So whether it's Trump or Fiorina is, she's moving up right now, but if you listen to what she says, it should frighten people. But I just don't like the strong man approach. I always said that I wanted to run on the things I don't want to do. I don't want to run your life. I don't want to run the economy, and I don't believe that our government should be running the world and policing the world. So in a way, it's exactly opposite of people saying, I can do this, I am the best, and I can run the world like nobody else can, and I can tell people what to do. That sort of thing is absolutely opposite of a libertarian view.
Well, Dr. Paul, we're going to have to leave it there. It's been a great pleasure having you on the program. I've been a big fan of your work for years. Keep up the good work. You can catch Dr. Paul's daily program at ronpaullibertyreport.com. I'd encourage you to do that. And thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
And thanks again to our very special guest this week, Dr. Ron Paul, for joining us. Last week on the program, I began to talk a bit about some of the emerging and intensifying economic winter season symptoms. And what I mean by that is, if you've been a long-time listener to the program, you know that it's our belief that because human behavior is predictable, that economies and currency and money all cycle. And these cycles repeat themselves over what are fairly long periods of time. Well, when easy money is prevalent, like it really has been over the past 25 years or so, you find that people borrow money and debt levels reach unsustainable levels. And when debt levels reach a point that they're unsustainable, then we see deflation and other painful economic symptoms kick in. So taking a look at what's going on now as far as the economic winter season is concerned, I want to expand on what I started to talk about last week and maybe expand a bit upon what Dr. Paul talked about on today's program as well. You know, back in 2007 and 2008, there were a number of banking failures. And one of the prime reasons that we saw banking failures was, number one, the assets on the books of the bank were toxic. In essence, they were bad loans. And two, there were a lot of derivatives, or really side bets, between banks. Now, it's my view, and I talk about this in the second edition of my book, New Retirement Rules, there will have to be more banking failures moving ahead. And it'll have to be, I believe, even on a larger scale than what we've experienced 7 or 8 years ago. I talked about this on last week's program. However, the too big to fail banks, frankly, are bigger. So taking a look at the derivative exposure, and if you're not familiar with derivatives, I'll give you a brief explanation. And just to keep it simple, a derivative is not really an investment in anything. If you buy a stock, for example, you're purchasing an ownership interest in the company. When you buy a bond, you're loaning a company money, and the assets of the company are at least partially collateralizing your loan to the company. But a derivative is different. Essentially, a derivative is a bet about what will or will not happen in the future, such as, for example, interest rates moving up and down. Well, the derivative exposure of the too big to fail banks is presently $278 trillion. And as I said on last week's program, that's about 28 times the size of the banks. A CEO of one of the too big to fail banks wrote this to shareholders not long ago. I shared it on last week's program. He said in his message to shareholders that some things never change. And I'm quoting, "There will be another crisis and its impact will be felt by the financial market. The trigger to the next crisis will not be the same as the trigger to the last one, but there will be another crisis." That being the case, as I have already forecast, and I'll get into this in a bit more detail in a moment, I am forecasting a significant downturn, in the stock market, because we will see, I believe, another financial crisis. Now, in addition to that, since 2007, worldwide, debt levels have increased by more than $57 trillion. That's an increase of 40% in the last 8 years. And you see the central banks, and I talked about this with Dr. Paul today, central banks all around the world have delayed a lot of the deflationary symptoms that we would expect as a result of all these debt excesses. However, this money printing can only mask deflation for a period of time. And essentially, this money creation will lead, I believe, to trade wars, lower labor force participation rates, even lower than it is today, lower commodity prices, and I think we'll see fiat currency failures. In fact, we're already witnessing the beginning of each of these trends. See, as currencies are devalued, a country's exports become more attractive and imports to the country become more expensive. So in an attempt to boost economies via exports, currencies are being weakened. This competitive devaluation of currency can lead to currency wars, which are, in essence, trade wars. And trade wars cause world trade to decline, worsening the symptoms of deflation. Now, trade wars occurred during the last economic winter season of the 1930s through the use of tariffs. And this time around, although some U.S. presidential candidates are advocating the use of tariffs, and if you watched the Republican presidential debate last week, you see that some of these candidates are saying we need to protect ourselves. We need tariffs, which I think history proves has not worked out very well. And I don't expect that we'll see the use of tariffs. I think that currency devaluation will be used primarily to fight what I see are upcoming trade wars. Now, my forecast for the market specifically the Dow Jones Industrial Average, is still that we'll see the level of the Dow Jones Industrial Average and the price of gold per ounce reaching parity. They will be equal. Now, it's difficult to forecast a particular level at which the Dow and the price of gold per ounce will meet, but I would not be surprised to eventually see a level of 3,000 for the Dow and for the price of gold per ounce. That may seem unfathomable to you. You may say, that can't possibly happen. That guy on the radio, he sounds like a lunatic. But let me remind you, a decline of 90% in the Dow seemed impossible in 1929 when private sector debt levels were much lower than today when measured as a percentage of the economy. That's right. Private sector debt levels today when measured as a percentage of the economy are 50% greater than they were at the beginning of the Great Depression. Unemployment seems pretty good when you look at the headline rate, 5.1%. But that's very misleading because the way the unemployment rate is calculated has changed. If you calculate today's unemployment rate using methodologies that were used prior to 1994, and I talked to Dr. Paul about this, there are those that would estimate the actual unemployment rate to be over 22%. And the labor force participation rate is presently at 62.6%, which is a 38-year low. And interestingly, those 55 and older, the number of folks in the labor force in the last 15 years in that age group has increased almost 60%. So this lower labor force participation rate is evidence, more evidence, that the deflationary symptoms of an economic winter season are upon us and ready to intensify. Now, I talk about more of these economic winter season symptoms in the epilogue of the rewrite of the new retirement rules book. If you'd like to get a copy of the revised version of the new retirement rules book, all you need to do is request our investors discovery kit, which is free. To get it, simply visit the website investingapproach.com. The website again is investingapproach.com. Just let us know your name and where you'd like us to mail your investors discovery kit, including the new revised new retirement rules book, and we will be glad to get it out to you. That's our program for this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Bye.